Bessemer is a small town. It's surrounded by rolling green hills and rivers that tumble towards Lake Superior. And the county it's in, Gogebic County, is as far west as you can get and still be in Michigan. It's in the Upper Peninsula. This is where Joe Bonovitz grew up. In the 1950s and 60s, he'd ride his bike, fish, and run around with friends.
I think the scariest stuff we ever did is we used to play tree tag.
There was this nearby grove of young pine trees, about 20 feet tall. And whoever was it would close their eyes.
And the rest of us would run into the little forest there, the trees, and then climb up them and get to the top. And they were spindly. They would come to get us, start climbing up, and we'd start going and grab the branch on the other tree, and then we'd jump to the next tree, and then jump to the next tree. And
are you serious?
Yeah, we used to call it tree tag.
That's reporter Ellie Katz you just heard. Bessemer was small even back then, but lively.
We had stores and buildings all the way up and down our main street. They were all occupied, all kinds of stuff going on. You know, grocery stores, hardware stores and dime stores, gamble stores, restaurants, the Tip Top, Dandy Bakery, Dewey's.
Gogebic County was iron country. It was right on the edge of copper country, too. Mining kept the region ticking. Joe and his friends would hang out near the railroad tracks.
Cars would come over with all this iron ore and, 70, 80 cars.
Joe became a mailman in Bessemer in 1973. By then, most of the iron mines were closing down, but Michigan's last major copper mine, White Pine Mine, was still booming.
White Piners were, making good money. I was delivering mail to a lot of White Piners, They're the ones that had boats and they had pickup trucks and, they did really well.
But in the 80s, things started to change. Copper prices plummeted.
Little by little, this business closed. Then another business on the main street closed. Eventually, the drugstore closed.
In 1995, the White Pine Mine closed too. In the following decades, two other major employers in the region, a paper mill and a prison, also closed. But around 2013, Joe heard whispers about a mine, a new mine. He dreamed about the hundreds of good-paying jobs that could come with it, the major economic boost. Copper mining is seeing a revival, partly because it's one of the most important metals for renewable energy. The clean energy transition cannot happen without it. And the Western Upper Peninsula, it's got copper. But there's something else the Western UP has too. Some of the region's most treasured natural spaces, and some of the Great Lakes' cleanest water. And the closer the mine gets to operating, the fiercer this fight over it becomes. This is Points North, a podcast about the land, water, and inhabitants of the Great Lakes. I'm Dan Wanchura. Today on the show, could a mining revival save this region or destroy it? Reporter Ellie Katz picks it up right after the break.
Points North is brought to you in part by Cherry Republic, celebrating Northern Michigan's tart cherries with products like jams, barbecue sauces, chocolate-covered cherries, and more. Online at cherryrepublic.com. And Aspire North Realtors, bringing real estate professionals together, supporting their involvement in the community, and advocating for the industry in a sustainable way. Online at aspirenorthrealtors.com.
About a year ago, Adam Simon decided to sit down and work out kind of a wicked math problem.
How much new copper the world needs if everyone drives a hybrid vehicle, if everyone drives a battery electric vehicle, if all of the electricity that's needed to charge battery electric vehicles comes from a combination of wind turbines and solar panels, and how much copper do we need if the whole world eliminates fossil fuels and all of our electricity comes from wind and solar?
Adam is a professor of earth and environmental sciences at the University of Michigan. And what he found, maybe not so surprisingly, is the amount of copper we're currently producing is nowhere near the amount of copper we need. And there's a lot at stake. like earlier this year.
New Delhi, India hit 126 degrees. The ocean off of Miami, Florida last year hit 100 degrees. I mean, that's the Atlantic Ocean at a temperature that we associate with hot tubs.
Parts of our region saw record warm temperatures and record low ice cover this past winter. For Adam, the solution is pretty cut and dry. More copper mines.
If we don't mine these metals, we will not reduce our emissions. We just can't.
It's quiet now.
It is. Enjoy it while it lasts.
This is Tom Grotewall. We're standing in the woods right on the property line of the mine site. They've already cleared hundreds of trees to make way for operations.
Once there's a mine here, I don't want to say once there's a mine, if there's a mine here, you have to think about all of the processes involved, from subterranean blasting and then the rock grinding. I mean, does rock grinding sound like a quiet activity to you? Does that sound something that's compatible with listening to woodpeckers and streams? I mean, it's hard to think of something more contrary to peace and quiet in nature.
When Tom moved here a couple years ago, he didn't know anything about the mine. He and his partner were in a congested city and wanted that peace and quiet. So they started looking at maps.
Where can we find a night sky where you can still see the stars? Where can you find a place where you don't have to hear traffic? Where can you find a place where there's no exhaust on the air?
They bought a little off-grid cabin tucked away in the woods, just steps from Lake Superior and Porcupine Mountain State Park. Tom says it immediately felt like they were living their dream, until one day when he was at work at the state park.
I was working in the little booth right down the road here, selling you your ticket, giving you trail advice, cleaning the bathroom. And this kind of eccentric guy rolled through and said, "Where's Copperwood? Where's the Copperwood mine?" And I said, what are you talking about, sir?"
It was the first time Tom heard the name Copperwood. The man was an activist opposed to the mine. And he was the first person to give Tom some information on Copperwood. Soon after, Tom started to notice changes, like a mine access road.
I started seeing heavy machinery coming in and out of that drive. And then when I was walking on the North Country Trail one day, I heard the ruckus of heavy machinery. And then I saw that there were actually quite a lot of machines there that were clear-cutting the forest. And this was a place where people had told me it was all just talk. Nothing was actually happening.
But something was happening. The very early phases of a copper mine. Just a few miles from his house, from Lake Superior, and from the Porcupine Mountains. For Tom, the risk of this mine is just not worth it.
You know, they call it a copper mine, but that's really false advertising. Because if copper is only 1.45% of what comes out of the ground, and 98.55% is waste, it's a lot more accurate to call it a waste mine.
Right now, copper mining produces more waste in the United States than any other metal. That's according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Globally, mines generate billions of tons of waste each year, called tailings. This sludgy, slurry mixture is a byproduct of the mining process.
The bottom line is that most mineral deposits will have all kinds of elements, some of which are interested people for economic reasons. But the other ones you have to kind of take out anyway, because you have to get at what you're interested in.
That's Karen Hudson-Edwards. She is a professor at the University of Exeter in England. She researches the environmental impacts of mining.
There are often suites of other elements that are potentially very toxic. So things like arsenic and lead and cadmium that have been in the past, well, they still are called heavy metals, although that term is fading away. We talk about those because there are known health effects to humans. So we know of lead poisoning. Arsenic is a very powerful toxin to humans. So that's the problem with many tailings.
Those get stored in what's called a tailings dam. Karen says these dams are some of the largest man-made structures on Earth. And she also says, for the most part, these dams do what they're meant to. They prevent these toxic wastes from getting into water or air at amounts dangerous to human health. But the dams can leach, and they can fail.
So there have been big accidents where, you know, because the tailings is stored as a slurry, as you said, if the dam wall fails, it rushes out and it can cause a lot of damage. It causes death to humans and ecosystems. You get these horrible pictures where, you know, these blankets of tailings are just covering river systems for many, 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 many kilometers.
In 2015, a dam collapse at an iron ore mine in Brazil caused one of the worst environmental disasters in the country's history. And in 2019, another dam collapsed in Brumadinho, Brazil. It killed more than 200 people. Some studies say the likelihood of tailings dam failures across the world is increasing. Copperwood's tailings dam will cover more than 300 acres. That's an area about the size of Epcot at Disney World. And it'll be built on land sloping towards Lake Superior, which is less than 2 miles away. But Karen says the Brumadinho disaster in 2019 shook up the mining industry.
I would say building a mine with a tailings dam in 2025, your safety is going to be orders of magnitude different than before Brumadinho.
Investors demanded change. And out of it came the first global tailings standard, an international standard created with the United Nations.
Although the global industry standard is not law, it's not enforceable, the mining industry, they know. When it happened, they sort of said, oh yeah, we need to up our game.
Mining in the US nowadays still poses environmental risks, she says. But it's a far cry from the virtually unregulated mines of the past. Highland Copper, the Canadian company that owns Copperwood, didn't respond to my requests for comment. But here's CEO Barry O'Shea addressing questions on a public Zoom call.
The state of Michigan has very rigorous standards across mining overall, but very specifically with regards to tailings. But beyond that, we're also committed to following the guidelines set forth in the Global Integrated Standard of Tailings Management. So really, we're setting ourselves to the highest standard here, as we should in this beautiful environment.
That doesn't mean there won't be pollution. Treated wastewater from the mine will probably discharge small amounts of minerals like copper and arsenic into waterways connected to Lake Superior. The state approved that. That discharge could impact some hypersensitive species of insects, algae, and zooplankton, eventually rippling up the food chain. The Lake Superior region still bears the scars from a long history of mining. Toxic tailings dumps, elevated levels of mercury, arsenic, and PCBs in lake sediment. Even if nothing goes wrong at Copperwood, that waste will likely be there forever, adding another scar to the landscape. So Tom Grotewall, who lives in the cabin down the road from Copperwood, has trouble trusting the company.
You look at these maps, the maps are just mind-bogglingly absurd. It's like a nightmare mine. If you had to imagine the worst place to put a mine, you'd say, okay, next door to the largest freshwater sea on Earth, right next to an old-growth park, and then right next to the North Country Trail. It's hard to think up a worse place for a mine than that. So yes, I spoke up because I live here, because this is my neighborhood and I care about it. But this is a place that hundreds of thousands of people connect to. And so I think that if anybody was living here and they heard about what was going on and they saw the maps, they had the information, they would want to speak up as well.
About a year ago, Tom created a group called Protect the Porkies and started a petition to stop the mine. Over 40,000 people have signed it since then. They agree. The risks are too high. The neighboring Porcupine Mountains are too special. Lake Superior is too important. And they're hoping a strong, organized opposition will scare off mine investors and rally elected officials against the project. But the petition is just a symbol. It alone probably won't stop the mine. Copperwood already has almost all of the necessary environmental permits. And earlier this year, the mine applied for a $50 million grant from the state of Michigan. It was money they needed badly to kickstart the project. So the state held meetings to hear how people felt about it.
We have 90 minutes for this portion of the agenda, and please limit your comments to 90 seconds each.
My name is Anaquit. I'm from the Menominee Indian Reservation, and I've been on this land. Our people have been on this land for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. I feel like you should deny this $50 million grant. We can't choose, you know, money and corporate greed over our own environment and our plants and animals. It disturbs me the fact that streams have been rerouted already.
I would hope you would say no to this grant because it puts at risk the most important economic driver in the Western UP, which is the tourism that the Porkies and Lake Superior support.
Our resort economy relies on tourism. And when there's no tourist season, there is no business. We need something to come in and build up our economy.
I own Rick's Auto, a business out in North Ironwood. I was born and raised here. And I'm in the middle of raising 11 children here. And I believe we can operate this mine and keep the natural resources we have here. Thank you for your time.
Letters of opposition came from nearly 200 people, many of them Western UP residents, and also from the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, which represents 11 Ojibwe tribes in the region. Letters of support came from nearly all the local townships, counties, and boards, saying it would be a much-needed boost to the local economy. Adam Simon, the University of Michigan professor, supports the creation of new mines like Copperwood too, but for different reasons.
So they have this stat that the average annual life of mine copper production is 64.6 million pounds, it looks like. Can you help me understand how much that is? Like, is that a lot of copper?
They're going to produce 64 million pounds per year?
Yes.
Let me do some math on my computer here. 64 million pounds. Okay. So that's about 30,000 tons of copper per year. Or another way to think about it would be, we go backwards here, that's about 300,000 battery electric vehicles. So that
did you say, sorry, did you say 300,000?
300,000.
Wow.
So sort of rounding, yeah. So that copper is important.
The state has partially approved the $50 million grant for Copperwood. The legislature still needs to okay it. Plus, Copperwood only gets the money if they're able to raise an additional $150 million by December 2025. Highland Copper stands to make a lot of money from this mine, or else they wouldn't go to the trouble. Over 10 years and millions of dollars spent getting permits. And that doesn't bother Joe Bonovitz, the guy who grew up playing tree tag. On top of being a retired mailman, he's also a local politician. And he thinks the mine could change the region for the better.
It's going to be an opportunity for people my son's age, people their age that are working out west, mining at mines. They said they'll come back here. If there's a mining job, they'll come back here. They want to come back here. They want to be able to fish. They want to go on Lake Superior. They want to deer hunt, you know, rabbit hunt, snowmobile. They want to do those things again.
But that's the best case scenario if Copperwood moves ahead. Gary Campbell is a professor of natural resource economics at Michigan Technological University. And I should note that Michigan Tech's administration also wrote a letter in support of the grant for the Copperwood mine.
Certainly for a smaller mine like that, that's not going to operate that many years. It's not going to have probably that long-term economic impact.
The estimated life of Copperwood, the time they'll actually be actively mining it, is only about 11 years.
It's certainly going to create some jobs, not as many as you might think.
He says a lot of mining labor is automated these days, or could be outsourced to specialists who come from other mining sites. Gary says it could spur a little auxiliary business, like transportation to and from the mine for workers, maybe an increase in airport use. But the biggest boost would come from tax revenue.
Areas that are in the UP that don't get much tax revenue suddenly are getting substantial amounts of money. However, that goes away when the mine closes. In a depressed area like that part of the UP, it's going to help, but it's not going to solve the problem.
For Tom Grotewall, though, it all kind of misses the point. He and his partner live off-grid, and he says it's the happiest he's ever been. And he thinks more renewable energy and clean technology, they're just band-aids we're slapping on a bigger problem.
And that problem arose from extraction of fossil fuels and then all of the machinery which runs on fossil fuels. We want to replace that problem with another problem, extraction of minerals and new machinery that requires those minerals. So the playbook is actually not changing at all. We're just going from extraction and machinery to extraction and machinery and pretending like something fundamental has changed.
Joe Bonovitz from Bessemer, he also sees the mine as a band-aid. But for him, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Because without it, he worries, the place he calls home would bleed out.
I really don't think of this as a potential environmental disaster. Certainly, you know, disasters have happened, and they'll happen again. But they don't happen every time. This is a survival story, not a success story. We need this to survive.
That episode was written and produced by Ellie Katz. It was edited by Morgan Springer. Additional editing from Ed Ronco, Izzy Ross, and me, Dan Wanchura. Music from Blue Dot Sessions. Sounds from Freesound, Protect the Borkies, Michigan Economic Development Corporation, and Six. If you're a fan of Points North, please do us a favor and rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find past episodes at pointsnorthpodcast.org. And one last thing, the PBS show Great Lakes Now has a new episode coming out. They've got a mining story for you too. This one's about saving a spawning reef in Lake Superior from century-old mining waste, and then a foraging adventure showcasing wild edible plants of the region. Learn more at greatlakesnow.org. All right, that's it for this time. Points North is a production of Interlochen Public Radio.